Accession number 26561, Wheel 8.
Wing Commander Bernard, Reel 8. Now, we've got to the point where you're being interrogated, you're in solitary confinement at the Gulag Luft camp, still in February, I would imagine.
Yes,
stretching into March. But basically, what happened next?
Well, I was then discharged. They were getting nothing out of me, and they'd given it up, but probably marked my identification card. They'd taken pictures of me and got a general identification card, and there was released into the Dulag Luft. It's called Dulag Luft.
That's into the compound.
Yes, into the compound.
Can you describe the compound?
Yes, it was a small prison camp, a holding camp prior to distribution to the larger Stalags. And
what was it like? How was it laid out?
I think it was two or three huts there with people who'd been captured. Some were sort of permanent staff to keep things ticking over. The food was, well, not too bad, but not too good either.
So what kind of thing was it?
Oh, mostly potatoes, soggy potatoes, really. And the odd piece of bread, not very good food at all.
And what about the huts themselves? What were they like?
They were, well, I learned later, the luxury of just being twin tier bunks. Crowded, but two
tiers.
How many
to a room?
I really don't remember. Must have been about 10, I think, in the small rooms. About 10.
And several rooms to the hut.
That's right, yes.
Were the huts not dissimilar to the ones you'd come across later on?
Oh, they were much, much better.
Why were they better? At
I don't know why. It was the way they were created.
In what way, then? Sorry.
Well, in so much as they were more spacious than the ultimate ones. And yeah, more spacious.
They have the facilities, water, latrines?
Yes, I think, yes. Yes, they had civilized toilets and so on, which the other places didn't have.
Now, did you meet anybody? Who was in there? Anybody in particular?
Our crew was still there. I don't know whether they had the whole thing in microphones to try and pick up. I think this was their object, was to put us into this one so that we'd discuss things, and they had a listening watch somewhere with microphones in those rooms.
So your crew were all in the same room?
No, we were split up in various rooms.
How would they listen to you by microphone then?
Well, because we got together and we'd walk around the outside of the huts.
No, I just wondered how they'd pick you up on microphone. I mean,
oh, yes. I don't know. It's the only reason I could think for them having a holding place to prior to distributing you.
So you think they might have had microphones within the huts?
Yes. Hidden in the timbering of the huts.
Not specifically for your crew, but for any crew that should
Any crew. They just monitored all the conversations.
So what happened next then? I mean, how long were you there?
I don't know precisely, but it must have been 2 or 3 weeks.
So into March?
Yes.
Or would it be stretched even into April?
No, I think it was still winter time, winterish.
So we're not quite sure of that. And what happened next?
Then we were put into in those days, put into proper compartments. A lot of us all packed in, and it took about 2 days to go to Bath, Stade Le Foin. And
what was that journey like by train?
Oh, little to no food, no rations, no Red Cross or anything like that.
Were you still thinking of escape, or was it just clearly impossible from the train?
Yes, we were thinking of it, but we realised that as it was still winter, that was not a good time to escape, because you need shelter in the winter for escaping. You can't just sleep out in the open fields. We weren't that daft.
Now, what happened when you got to Stalaglof 1 at Bath?
Yes.
I was
filtered out and put into solitary confinement. Just me, I don't know what happened to the others. They split up the officers and the NCOs, and I was put into a solitary place, and I had a stool, and I looked through the unglazed, barbed window, bars on the window, cooler. It was very cooler, I can tell you.
And what, you think you'd been picked up, again, this is the parachute thing, was it?
Yeah, the parachute, they obviously starred my identity, there's something fishy about this bloke.
And the others didn't have that parachute, of course.
No.
Were you interrogated at all, or was it just a...
Oh, yes, I was interrogated.
Again,
by the Luftwaffe, yes. And an interesting little side bit was I heard a rustling in my sack-like pillow, which was filled with wood shavings, and it turned out to be a baby mouse mother with three little piglet bald mice, you know. And they kept me sane. They were my pets. I didn't declare them to me. And I fed the mum on crumbs from my black bread. And I looked out of the window, and it was snow on the ground. It was up on the Baltic coast. And the chaps going round in a wolf-like tray, round and round the perimeter. And a lot of them were wearing light blue French uniforms with no socks. And the bottoms were little flaps where they should have had gaiters and clogs in some case. And these chaps, I thought, God, a lot of Frenchmen here. And so when I was eventually, they gave up interrogating me and shoved me into the Bath Luftwaffe 1 compound. And I went up to one of these characters in the blue powder room, and I said, in my French, I asked them, and he said, he looked down at me, and he had a big ginger beard with snow on it, and he said, don't be bloody silly, we're all RAF here. They've been given them, because a lot of them, of course, have been shot down and uniforms burnt in the fire of the shot down aircraft. And then I went and asked...
Now, this is a mixed camp, isn't it? Mixed officers and NCOs?
No, separate, entirely separate.
Separate?
It was like checks, two diamonds pointing to the tips to each other.
So you were in the
I was in the NCOs one, and the rest of the crew, and Di Davis and Jimmy Campbell were in the NCOs one. How do I find accommodation? Who's controlling the inside of this camp? And they said, oh, I don't know, really. But go and try old Dixie in hut 3. There were just 3 huts there for the NCOs. I said, go and try that. And So I went in there, and somebody said, "Oh, try room 3. And I went in there, and I said, "I think there's a bed empty in there." I went in, and I said, I'm new here." You know, they could tell that. "Well, when's the war going to end?" I said, "I don't know." He said, I said, "I believe somebody said there was a spare bed in here." "Oh, there was, but we burnt it yesterday." The fuel was in very short supply. And it was one little briquette per man per week was the ration of fuel. And I hadn't been long there when Paddy Flynn, the only Hurricane pilot in the block, said to me, "Who's coming with me to get coal? Because it's bitterly cold." I mean, where the huts were held together with nut and bolts, the inside had a blob of ice on it, the thickness of a half a golf ball, and very cold. And the blanket they gave you was a felt-like construction, which let the warmth out, and let the cold in, because it didn't lay flat. A very awful one. And the palliasse was wood shavings, as was the pillow. And the sacking wasn't even proper hessian, it was twisted brown paper weave. And 3 tiers. Eventually I got a bunk, somebody.
In hut 3?
In hut 3, room 3, yes. I think they moved it in from some other place.
Now, what were your first impressions of the life in hut 3 then?
Oh, yes, very interesting. In fact, I teamed up with what eventually became, he was the camp leader, was Dixie Deans, took me under his wing.
Dixie Deans?
Yeah,
very. Now tell me about him.
He's a famous. You could write a book on him alone.
Well, tell us a bit about him. Because you knew him, you don't know him now. He was a sergeant, was he, or a flight sergeant?
He was a flight sergeant too, yes.
And what was he like?
Wonderful. He was a doer Scot. But he spoke, he'd done a lot of, he was good at German. He taught German by a good teacher at his school. And he was a diplomat. We had a previous senior NCO, senior by age and rank and so on, but we scrubbed that. We had a community that decided its own philosophy on who was going to lead them and look after their interests.
And so it wasn't just on rank then?
Not then, no. No.
So who was the one who, before?
He was a flight sergeant.
Do you remember his name?
And I'm not going to declare it because it might seem nasty things.
So why was he so good then?
Because he was a diplomat, he was a good sportsman, he listened to people, and he was a very strong character too. And the Germans were a little bit scared of him.
But how did his strong character show itself? In what way was he?
Well, for example, when the Red Cross, eventually the Red Cross parcels came through, but that was difficult too because the route had been clogged by Christine Knowles, who sent us all about 10 Bibles each. We wanted food. We didn't need all those Bibles, but they clogged the route, packing cases full of them. And then the Red Cross parcels started to come. No, before that, we had the basic rations, which were very, very poor.
Well, which way are we going to take this? I mean, we've got three topics running now. We've got the Bibles, we've got the Red Cross parcels, we've got Dixie Deans.
Oh, Dixie Deans. Well, I've wandered from him.
It's just to illustrate his character.
Why I came to Red Cross parcels, the Germans got nasty about things. I think one of the escape characters had a lot of Red Cross food in his escape kit. And a German said, "Right, bring the washing up bowls for every 10 men." Had a washing up bowl for the whole lot of them. he said, and they poured all the Red Cross parcels into the one bowl. Soup.
Opened.
Opened, yeah, fully opened, and poured into this basin. And Dixie said, no, take it away. He said, I'm not having that. He said, and when the preserving Red Cross people come round, I shall tell them what you've done. And he really argued nicely. He never got their backs up, but he was a very strong. He said, we don't want any parcels if that's the way you're going to give them to us. Things like that, too. And
now, let's have a look at some of the instances, the types of life. What about the food the Germans gave you? What food?
The German rations varied from the time of year. The basic one was, well, you'd start the morning with a cup of mint tea, which was no good, was ghastly. It was mint leaves instead of tea leaves. And it was hot, and we used it for shaving, because it was the only hot water we had for shaving instead of drinking it, and we drank water. And then midday, you would get a bowl of soup, was either turnip soup or cabbage soup or sauerkraut soup, and a 7 men to a small Hovis loaf was cut up, and those were 7 men's bread rations. And once a week you'd get a knob of butter about that big, and a spoonful of a tablespoonful of jam every week. And that was it.
And how was this doled out? And from where?
From the German cookhouse.
So they'd cook it and prepare it, and then you just went and fetched it?
Yeah.
They'd use
volunteers to go in. In fact, later on, and then I'll come to that, really. NCOs went into the cookhouse, in the German cookhouse, and sort of boiled water there for the soup and so on.
Now, what about the Red Cross? Firstly, let's look at this, the reason it was held up. What is this about Bibles? And I've never heard about this. Can you tell us about the background for it?
Well, we weren't getting any Bibles. We weren't getting any Red Cross parcels through. And when we complained to the, I don't know what the authorities were called, the Red Cross anyway, the people who looked after the Geneva Convention, aspects. But they said, you know, cases are coming through, but all that was getting through were these cases of Bibles. By Christine Knowles.
Why?
Well, keep us religious, you know, so, to comfort us, I think. We wanted food, not... Well, we wouldn't mind the odd Bible and several to a room, but...
This is one each, was it? Or more than one?
More than one each, yes, at that time.
And when you actually got them, were they actually issued?
No, they were left in the packing cases.
But did the Germans offer them?
The Germans came in and said, this has come through the Red Cross, you know.
But you didn't take them?
No. We couldn't. I think some of them even used them because we had no toilet paper.
That's what I was wondering, why they wouldn't take them and use them for other things.
Yeah, well, I did. And it was very fine later on when I was building radio sets. The paper was very thin that I needed for condensers.
Right, so that's the Bible. Now, when the Red Cross deliveries did start, what was in a Red Cross parcel? And were there different types? Because there are different types, I believe.
Yes, that's right. They were about the size of a shoebox. And they contained condensed milk, a little tiny tin of Nescafe, meatloaf, prunes, biscuits, small packet of biscuits. Just about a meagre, they originally had hoped, one a week to augment the German bits of bread and so on.
And were you aware of any differences between, say, the British and the Canadian Red Cross?
Oh, yes. The Canadians one were always the same, identical right from beginning to end. The same one, but very good.
What was good at what? Better than the British one?
For food value, if you had a one-off of each, you would certainly go for that.
So what was in the Canadian one?
The Canadian one, beautiful biscuits, a nice big pack of very good chips biscuits, a large tin of Klim, which is milk spelt backwards, milk powder which you mixed with water, and you made yourself a little twizzle stick, which was a propeller blade and a piece of stick, and you could mix it up, mix up the powder with the water to form milk. That was very good. A tin of Spam. What else? Some biscuits, a small bar of chocolate. That's about all. Probably a little packet of salt and a little packet of pepper. But very good. Very, very good food content.
Now, what was your daily routine like? You know, once you'd settled into your hut three, and what would a typical day be like? Well, we'll come to the escape stuff later, if you're doing, but...
Yes.
What would the...
You'd get up and you'd go and get the... they had some large jugs for the combine. We split ourselves into combines. They were called combines, where chums would get together, and any combine would range from 2 to 10. I ran a 10 combine.
What was a combine?
A combine was a bunch of chums who decided they would live as a bunch, as a sort of mini family almost, and they would take turns at going for the jugs of hot. We got rid of the tea and we said, just give us hot water. We do, and they've got a little tiny packets of tea in the Red Cross parcels, and you save the tea leaves and brew them up about 3 times, you know, to get the full value out of them.
So, what you'd send someone to go and fetch the hot water?
The water, and clean the hut out. Usually we're together in a corner of the hut or something like that, and you would have turns on the stove for... depending on the number of men in the combine, would do your own, reheat the potatoes that you might get, things like that, or fry the Spam or the pilchards or that sort of thing.
So what would you do in the morning?
Well, there was always some sort of activity. They eventually became more, the early days up at Bath, we took over the German cookhouses on occasion and put all the forms together to form a stage, and got the blankets on a piece of wire and had a little theatre, and the entertainment was mostly jazz. And then we became, when we opened up Stalingrad 3,
how did you get jazz? I mean, you need instruments for jazz.
Yes, I don't know where they came from, but the Red Cross supplied them ultimately. I might even be in a mouth organ or two to start.
And so these are more concerts and theatre at Bath, Stalingrad 1.
Yeah, they were the primitive theatre devices. And I took part in what was it, Christmas 41. Alfie Fripper, a 6-year prisoner, and I were the two ugly sisters in the pantomime Cinderella, you know, and very sort of dressed up in fun. And but it was all very primitive in those days, early days. But
what do you remember of that show then? Tell us much, you know.
Oh, I don't know. It was nonsense and a few vulgarities introduced into the thing.
And what sort of costumes did you have?
Oh, we made them up from sheets and things that had come out from home and that sort of thing, yeah.
So that was one thing people
did.
Yeah,
thing I thought, because eventually Ronnie Mogg, who was a a journalist. He produced this show, Alfie Fripp and I. Alfie Fripp, incidentally, was shot down in September 39 from France. He was a very old prisoner. He's coming to stay with me shortly. And and Ronnie Mogg produced the script for this show, and it was quite good considering our resources. But,
and what were the jazz band like?
Very rudimentary and not fun, but it was all we had.
Seeing as you mentioned this, let's talk a bit about let's talk about Alfred Fripp first. What was he like? I mean, was he a flight lieutenant or
no?
Flight sergeant. Sorry.
Yes.
What was he like?
Oh, he was very good. He got on. He was able to keep the Germans sweet, and we elected him as our Red Cross parcel collector and disher out under the German's eye, you know, and made sure we got a good, and if parcels came in, he would supervise the unloading at the railway station and the team to go and get them and keep the guards sweet. And
and he was a good friend of yours then, as
your
combine.
Yes, in fact, later on, up at Bath, I taught him radio and made him sit his City and Guilds exams. And this is why he became a signals officer with me when we came back home.
And the second one you mentioned was Ronnie Mogg, also, I presume, a flight sergeant.
Yes, and he was his civil job was a newspaper reporter.
And what was he like?
Clever with words, of course, hence he writes the script. Good on escaping themes.
Was he a particular friend of yours, or was he in the whole
reasonably, combine? Yes. And also, of course, Peter Thomas, who became Lord Peter Thomas, and he took his law exams the same time as I did my finals in radio engineering. I took those...
What was Peter Thomas like?
Peter Thomas became Lord Peter Thomas. Yeah.
But that doesn't tell us what he was like. Do you see what
he was one of the gang across the way, and he was in with a lot of university chaps in his particular hut, which was opposite ours. He was in hut 2, I was in hut 3, and our windows faced each other. And I knew Peter quite well. Yes.
And